Zealand. The interesting elements of living in different countries around the world and having the exact same types of scumbaggery afoot means that there's no escape from it. You only have the option to figure out what weapons your enemy is using and how best to defeat them. Usually, by using their own weapons against them. Like the legal fiction and terminology, language, legalese. If you don't know anything about these topics, this show's going to, probably leave you speechless because you won't know what's going on. My very special guests are Clint Richardson. We're kind of a round table here today. Clint Richardson, he's from Canada. He's a contractor and he knows he has to mind the language on FCC-regulated radio like we got here, don't you, Clint? Mm-hmm. And we also have, allegedly known as Dave, coming at us from the Uber Kingdom, the UK. And after the break, we may in fact be joined by up to two or perhaps even three others, and we might even be taking callers, ladies and gentlemen. So if you're keen to call in, the number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525 is the number to ring in here to American Freedom Radio. Okay, so to start off this, I just want to give Clint the opportunity to sort of introduce himself and tell everybody who he is and what he does to preface this little conversation here.
Oh, what to say. I made a couple movies called the Corporation Nation series. They're up on the corporationnation.com. I also have a blog, which is realityblogger.wordpress.com. And, I don't know, I make my rounds. I've been on with Vinny before and always enjoy the humor while talking about such dastardly things.
Mm-hmm. And then we also have allegedly known as Dave.
Hello there.
Hello, Bill Turner. We just have you turn up. You might want to take any phones you have there off the hook, mate.
Yeah, good morning, Vinny. How's things?
Well, we're good, mate. We are live right now. Sorry, Dave, to interrupt you there, but Bill Turner was up late last night, no doubt, giving a presentation from what he's learned about all the stuff that's going on with the law and fiction and what have you. So, Bill, we're just at the point in the conversation where we're going to introduce ourselves. So if you would.
Introduce myself?
Mm-hmm. Just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Okay. Yeah, hi, it's Bill Turner here. I've been on this walk for since about 1999 now. And, boy, once you take that red pill, it sure does change. And to try and go back to what we knew before, kind of hard, Vinny.
Yep. You can't go back. You can only go forward.
Back, unfortunately, no.
Yeah. And Dave?
Yeah, well, he's right there. It's like it's exactly like the Matrix. Once you take that pill, you can't go back in the Matrix. So, I've been kind of out of it for the last 5 years. I'm a freedom fighter back in the old UK. I've been sort of, up against the police and the courts. I've just had a YouTube video of me being stopped by the criminal thugs of the police force over here. I'm just one of the little revolutionary freedom fighters. Fighters standing up against the man.
Well,
or the woman.
When you fight and stand up against the man, the average person before they do this, they wonder about what dangers lie there. Did you, gentlemen, really, really, truly consider the dangers and kind of like the grief that you've since gone through and the amount of time and effort that it's wound up taking up? At the end of the day, did you really think it through in the first place? And did it even matter if you did or not?
To my mind, there was no choice. I remember watching Roots when I was 13 and thinking to myself, okay, what kind of slave would I be if I was back then? And, would I be the slave in the field who would do just enough to avoid getting whipped? Or would I be the house slave who, gets a little, does his work really, really well and... gets the preferential treatment, or do I be the Kunta Kinte and find my way out of that? I thought, well, great, at least I don't have to make that decision. But here I am, like 30 years later, finding out that I'm right there and I've got to make that choice. So I've made it.
And I think it's important to note that most people strive to be house slaves. That's the preferred choice in most professions. At least that's the way it is in America. I'm assuming that since the corporate world is pretty much global at this point and being regulated globally through the United Nations, I'm assuming that it's like that just about everywhere. You are a slave, but you get to boss other people around, and so you are really that's the objective of middle management, is to become that house slave.
Yeah, that's it, because, the masters, there are only a few of the masters out there, and so everyone else is a slave, and you just got the various levels of slavery.
and everything is the top down, isn't it? And I've recognized in my life that when you work for a big organization on the ground floor, front line, you have no idea what that organization is really about. Doesn't matter what company you're working for. Doesn't matter what they tell you. You have no idea.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with our governments, because our governments have now become companies. And the people who are assets to that company also have no idea.
Well, you're talking about human capital. So we don't call them people anymore. We call them assets or human capital, even commodities when you get down to the nitty gritty. Because if you're not a commodity in a corporation, you're a commodity in the prison system where you get traded as a security, basically.
This idea makes me physically sick to my stomach. Like I'm actually feeling sick just thinking about how we're treated. We're friggin' cattle.
Well, what's really important to note here, I think, is a little, a beautiful little piece of work called the Declaration of Human Rights by the Agenda 21, Sustainable Development Government of the United Nations, of which the United States is very, very heavily enthralled with, and every city, every major city, state, and federal government has treaties with the United Nations. This is supposed to be treason, but What can you say? I mean, we trade with China, which is a communist country, and that's supposed to be trading with the enemy. But if we read the Declaration of Human Rights, I think it's the International Declaration of Human Rights, you can see where all this is coming from, because specifically what that document, the main purpose, the main goal of that document, among other things, is to take away what is referred to as personal property rights. And so if no one owns property, then everyone owns property. And along with that, most importantly, is that it takes away, its main goal is to take away the concept of the American culture, subculture, which is the rights of the individual, the God-given natural rights of the individual, which are supposedly protected by the Constitution. But, you know, we can kind of laugh at that on the side. But what we really have is this Declaration of Human Rights specifically says, no, that is not how it should be. It should be like this. The individual rights and property ownership of the individual must take second place to the collective, to the community. They use these words like community to make you, oh, that sounds so wonderful. It's just so great. We're going to have sustainable development and social justice. And anytime they need to widen the road, they're just going to take your house and everything's just going to be all fine. So it's very important to understand that that is where all this is coming from. This is based historically off a lot of other things, but this Declaration of Human Rights is very, very important to understand. I suggest everybody go read it, because you're going to find some horrific things that are coming down through treaty, through agreements, through private associations, which is what government is becoming, a privatized entity that gives contracts to all these private associations. And that is coming directly from the United Nations. So private property and freedom and individual rights take second place to the importance and the needs of the collective community.
This is why the UN can justify ordering NATO to go into Libya and ordering people to go into Syria, right?
Well, and that's also important to understand, is that in every country you have this thing called the doctrine of emergency. And it's very important to understand that America's been in a state of declared national emergency since 1933, when Roosevelt declared it, a couple days after he was elected, actually. Now, Obama has declared it for the swine flu. George Bush declared it for the terrorists of 9/11. And what we have is, we haven't had a war since 1942. We don't declare wars anymore. What we do is, because the president declares an emergency, you have a case, a situation now where we are fighting a war against the emergency. It doesn't matter what the emergency is. This is the very nature of false flags. You're waging a war against the emergency. Right now, the emergency is swine flu. Soon it's going to be financial crisis, which like it was in Roosevelt's day. And you find this in every country. And that's what's really interesting, because in France, it was called the state of siege, and it's right in the Constitution that says the Constitution can be suspended. In Great Britain, it's called the Defense of the Realms Act. In Germany, when Hitler became the dictator, it was called Article 48. And that said specifically that if the public safety and order in the German Reich are seriously disturbed or endangered, the President of the Reich may suspend in whole or in part the fundamental rights established, which includes inviolability of person, inviolability of domicile, freedom of opinion and expression, freedom of assembly and association, and secrecy and communication, and of property. So in the United States, it's called the War Powers. In Australia, New Zealand, it's going to be called something else. But every constitution basically has the power to be suspended, which means we have no guarantee, if you want to call it that, of rights. We instead now have these emergency statutes. And every single presidential directive and every single executive order that comes out only has power because of this declared state of emergency. Without it, the Patriot Act and all of these little occupations and what they call wars but are really emergency actions or emergency occupations would have no power.
That's interesting, Clint, because in the New Zealand Parliament, what the Prime Minister does is he declares a state of urgency.
There you go.
And rushes bills through Parliament in one night.
Exactly, and that's what it is. You have a situation where the president can pass whatever he wants. In fact, he just recently said, well, you know, in this Preparedness Act, he said, well, I'm going to hand over all biological weapons testing and applications to the Secretary of Defense. Well, it's like the DOD, the Secretary of Defense, just happens to be Leon Panetta, who was the former, oh gosh, CIA or FBI head, you know. So right now, the Department of Defense, which is a delegated power of the president, doesn't have to get permission from the president to test biological agents on American people. That's the state we're in. Because we're in this state of a national emergency, the president can do that.
Only because you accept that.
Well,
only the moment that people actually stand up, they are afraid of us. And the moment that people start up in accepting their rights, most people don't realize that because we're dead on paper, they need to start off from the Wills Act. So when you go to the Wills Act and find that everything can be either taken away or given to you by your will, then you'll find that we can take the power back. Now, the only way that you can invoke your will is by a declaration. And quite interesting, you say that the declaration started your great country, or once great country. We now have to stand up for ourselves and start making our own declarations, or start declaring what we want, and we do it with our will. So the first place for anyone to start is with the Wills Act, and ours is the 1837, which is an imperial act, which came from Great Britain. So once you've had a look through that, you'll see that you do have rights, and all you have to do is start standing up. They're afraid. They know we're coming. They've told us that here in New Zealand.
Well, you know, I don't disagree with that, but I take it a little bit further and say that there is no right that can be written down. There is no right that can be guaranteed. There is no right that can have that kind of legislator. Only a privilege can be written down like that. So if you have a right and you want to use it...
No, we're talking...
The music's coming, gentlemen, so we're going to have to go to a break. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, a little roundtable discussion about how to make yourselves free in a land of nice criminal tyranny and scumbaggery. We'll be right back at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream, just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TVI brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president, it seemed. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Living Eastwood Show. The show that's all about bringing random people together on radio. Because I listen to the show sometimes, you know, like reruns and what have you. And it's real fun to listen to the guests because, you know, you got some intelligent person in a room having a conversation. And I don't care who you are. Listening to an interesting conversation is interesting to listen to, isn't it? So if you just get more people into a room, it makes it just a little bit better. At least I think so. I could be wrong. The other side of it is it's actually just fun to meet with people of like mind and have a conversation for the people themselves doing it.
Translation, Vinny likes to listen to the sound of his own voice.
My ego could not be bigger. And I'm 6'4", trust me. But anyway, What were we talking about before we came away from break there? You were talking about the public and the private.
Yeah. Clint was saying about the, you know, about finding them in the under the legislation, which he's absolutely correct there. If you register for your benefits, such as driver's license, such as passports, IRD numbers, and everything like that, that's all in the public side of the ledger. Now, if you remove yourself from the public side of the ledger, then you enter the private world. And under the private world, everything is done by your will and by declaration. So once you move into the private side, there's a totally different thing goes on, where you settle things in honour and you act like a gentleman. So it takes all the argument and fight out of it. And I think this is the way we're moving now after years of doing as you two guests have said. We've fought them through the through the courts. We've fought them through every different angle, and we kept getting beaten up. So now I've had enough beating, Vinny. I'm going to go back into the private, and I'm going to be a private citizen because I like it there.
Now, what advantages? Oh, sorry, go ahead, Clint.
Well, yeah, that's exactly. You know, I agree with you completely. The problem is with most people, again, because we value our little title of house slave as middle management. The problem with most people with that is that they, as you become more of a private citizen, you start losing a lot of the state and federal, whatever your country is, services. The services that are offered at a barrel of a gun, essentially, but still, services, your retirement, your Social Security, which is now in 130 countries, your anything that the state sponsors. And so most people, the problem with becoming private citizens is that you lose these services, and that's where you lose most people. And that's a real problem.
The point is, though, those services are going away. You know, we're seeing that, all the benefits of the state are being dismantled right in front of us.
The laws are being structured so that the government and the bad guys basically become the beneficiaries, and we become the trustees with all the responsibility.
Well, now remember, you gotta remember that we are commodities. We are profitable beings. No matter what it is that we are, participate, whatever commerce we're participating in, and so. What you really have to consider, and what these people who think that their services only come from the state, that they can't do it by themselves, they can't be responsible for their own actions, for God's sake, what you got to understand, and what these people have to start understanding, is that they are not a commodity as much as they are a liability in the chain of profit in a for-profit government system that is global. You have to start realizing that government doesn't need the people. It's surpassed the point of being government, and has become basically the holder of the stock, which in the stock is the human capital. And so, the average lifespan, so that people can actually collect their retirement, we don't want that to go past 65. So it wouldn't make sense to keep allowing people to live to 100. No, we want to diminish that. We want to diminish the amount of people that are going to collect these services. So, apparently your dog didn't like my answer.
No. All right, well, it is a meaty subject we were getting into. Perhaps the dog got confused.
Well, you're looking a bit too at small scale. What we've basically got here is slaves or mental slaves. You know, they went through a stage of overt slavery, back in the 1700s, 1800s, to this kind of open prison slavery, just to condition us into this idea where we're enslaved by our own minds. You know, we're used to this idea of debt, and so we've got this idea that we need to pay this money back, and so we're economic slaves. And it's all fake. We know it's all fake, but the general guy on the street doesn't. And that's the sort of mentality that's being perpetuated here.
And the mentality
I don't think it's necessary for the man on the street to understand it entirely. It's usually just a small determined minority that changes courses of history.
Well, and unless the minority are hunting witches, which you know, the concept of being a free man has been mixed so heavily with the concept of anarchy, and of course the concept of anarchy has been so demonized in the public comprehension of what it actually is.
Well, let's look at the word anarchy. Let's have a look at the latter. Anar meaning the lack of, and archy meaning a leader. It means you just don't have a leader.
Yeah.
No. Actually, it didn't mean no leader. Archy actually means ruler. So that you have no ruler.
Well, and if you have a population, if you have a population that equates anarchy to basically witchcraft, then you have a population that will not support people who actually want to fight for their own freedom, stand up for their own rights. And again, you can't legislate rights. A right is something you either have or you have not. It cannot be delegated. It cannot be given to you. It must be something that is taken, and you must fight for it with your life. That is the only definition of a right. Everything else is a privilege. Everyone else has privileges. These gentlemen on the show sound like they have rights, and the only way that they can, utilize those rights is to fight the fight and to defend those rights to the death if necessary.
No, I actually disagree with you there. We are born with inherent rights, but we don't have to fight for them. And the moment you stop fighting for them and accept them, everything changes. Now, what we used to do was go into the courts and argue and fight. Now we're having cases thrown out. They don't go to court because we're accepting their offers and settling them in the private. So quite the contrary to what you say. We've passed through that phase now, and we're not commodities. We're actually securities. So the first person you will normally see when you start this walk is Security Intelligence Service or the equivalent in your countries. I'm not too sure what the American and English ones are, but ours is the Security Intelligence Service, and they have to ensure that all their securities are kept safe. So wait a second,
let me get this straight. If you wind up being intelligent enough to recognize that you're actually a security that's owned by the government, the security intelligence guy comes to see you.
Indeed. I've had the visit.
Oh, that's classic.
Yeah, I've had the visit.
It's obvious, really. You know,
Yeah. So look, all I'm saying, guys, is, hey, look, we've fought and beaten our heads up against the wall for a long, long time. Now we're trying the other path, and believe me, there's no fight in it. They disappear into the woodwork.
The problem I see, though, is that at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is free everybody, not just find a remedy for ourselves. And all this private and public is beyond the beyond the scope of most people. So I see it as something more fundamental than that, and it's showing people how to lose the fear of coming up against the powers that be.
Well, I think the other question that has to be posed is, who regulates the regulators? In other words, we have in America, we have been taken over by the American Bar Association, connected to the, Royal, the accredited regency there in Britain. So the Bar Association now, we're supposed to have these separations of powers in America, but at this point, the President of the United States is a barred attorney, as well as his wife. About 56% of the Senate and about 36% of Congress are all barred attorneys. Most of the governors in every state, the attorney generals. We have a system of lawyers running our government, and I'm pretty sure it's probably the same in most places, financial officers and attorneys. So if I then go into a court of supposed law, of course, declaring that it be a court of the correct nature. Who regulates and who is there to say that court, must operate within the bounds of what we're talking about here today? And that's the real problem, is because if you have no separation of powers, if you have no checks and balances anymore, because the whole thing is run by the Bar Association, you can't get a case into the Supreme Court, for instance, without it going and being approved by the bar before it goes there. So you have this private association contracted to be the law in the United States, who's making the laws and then enforcing the laws and then putting people in prison and making a profit through the court registry investment system by investing in prisoners and prisons. You know, the whole thing is so corrupt.
Wait a second. Doesn't it? It's both vertically integrated and horizontally integrated. Everything that it requires to build on itself, to maintain itself, to produce itself, to market itself, to everything that it needs to do, it already has. That's the strength of the system that we're dealing with.
Yes. And so that is really the single most daunting barrier, at least in America, and I'm pretty sure it's that way a lot of places. That's the most daunting challenge, both in government and in the courts, because really it's a closed loop system. You can't get a fair trial in this country. I'll just give you an example. A friend of mine went to court, and he was fighting just a regular ticket. First of all, the judge was not even a judge. It was a clerk that was wearing the robe of a judge. And he asked the judge who he worked for, and he said the municipality, the municipal corporation that is the city. He asked the police officer who he worked for and got paid by, and he said the municipal corporation, the city. And then he asked the prosecuting attorney who he worked for, and he said, well, the municipality, this is the city. And then he said, well, can I get a fair trial? And the judge said, of course you can get a fair trial. Right? Well, how do you fight that? How do you fight that? Especially when your attorney is also a barred attorney who is sworn to uphold the procedures of the court, not your your rights. You're actually giving yourself to the court. So this is the most daunting part of this, because like you said, it is fully integrated to where it's very difficult to get past that. Now, I'm sure these guys are much more hip on how to supersede that, get around that through, the court of equity, the court of record, and all that.
It's extracting yourself from a spider web.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very sticky process.
Well, I was just going to add to that that the system's the same the world over, at least the westernized countries. You kind of speak as though America has got some kind of independence from England. It hasn't. It never did.
Agreed.
I love that. Who financed the Revolutionary War against King George? Oh, yeah, that's right. It was King George.
Yeah.
They borrowed money off him to finance themselves.
You're listening to
the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be taking callers after the break. The number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. You can also join us in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question. Back in a few minutes.
Live from the Chateau de Rothschild, drinking wine out of Sir Francis Bacon's skull.
I'm sorry, I couldn't say that with a straight face. Oh my god. Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. Speaking of Francis Bacon's scalp, he's the guy who came up with all the legal fiction and basically the modern court system, isn't he? Bill, you know something about this guy, don't you? Can you explain a little bit about him?
Well, there's some very interesting stuff on the internet now about Sir Francis Bacon. How many times he's reincarnated as Christopher Columbus, and all the different entities that he's reincarnated as. But certainly, the esoteric knowledge of the man was unbelievable. Wrote the all the Shakespeare. He was Shakespeare. He wrote the King James Bible, got locked up in the tower and all sorts of things, but they could never touch him in the courts. Very, very interesting chap. And if you actually Google him on YouTube now, there's some very good stuff on him, Vinny.
He was an alchemist as well, wasn't he?
Exactly.
So that would kind of account for these so-called reincarnations.
Yeah.
Because of perhaps I'm not being clear. Because of the Philosopher's Stone.
Yes.
I'm not sure if everybody knows about the Book of Aquarius and basically how to make the Philosopher's Stone.
Nah, man, that sounds interesting.
I'll email it to you, me.
I probably won't read it. I'd rather hear about it.
there's an audio book as well, so you can.
Oh, choice.
But literally, the Philosopher's Stone is in parts, eternal life. There's several alchemists who created the stone who apparently are still sort of wandering around today, and perhaps Francis Bacon is one of those.
Yeah, there was some rumours of people who can allegedly live for multiple generations that are just walking among us today and that nobody knows.
Yeah, there's one character, Saint-Germain, apparently is one of them as well. I think the film Highlander is basically a chronicle about these characters. It's not about Scotsmen running around the world. It's about these alchemists who are so long lived, they have to find strategies to keep reinventing themselves, and getting bored with life. They're sort of in competition with each other. I don't know.
There can be only one Highlander.
But after reading the Book of Aquarius, I was...
Hold on. Just before we continue, this gives me an idea. A listener once told me, because I think it was Anzac Day in New Zealand yesterday, we're trying to remember the soldiers and everything like that. And somebody commented on the video that I put up that the only war that we should have is if the elite themselves actually fight them, mano a mano, if a couple of hundred guys just go up against each other, these rich-ass bankers, who are all old and decrepit and whatever.
But they're so fragile, though. I mean, it would be, they'd break a bone.
exactly. It would be hilarious because nobody good would die. Only scumbags.
Yeah, let's see Evelyn de Rothschild grab a rifle and get out there.
Yeah, well, I think even really do it Highlander style and swords only.
Swords.
And because they're real wealthy, they can get real awesome ancient swords like the Highlander dudes could have gotten and stuff like that, like $1 million katana, slice off the head of frickin' David Rockefeller or something, bro, with the blood spurting out like a plasma sprinkler. That would crack me up for days.
Yeah, then I could televise it.
Mm, pay-per-view, baby.
Yeah, the Hunger Games.
It'll be like the movie Death Race.
The Banker Games.
The Banker Games. Oh, yes.
Oh, jeez.
Clint, that's your next doco, bro.
What's that?
That's your next documentary, all right? The banker games, you know, the candidates, you know. If you had to pick the top 16 candidates for the banker games, the top 16, the cream of the crop of scumbaggery that should go in and fight to the death. Sacrificed, as it were, for the amusement of the mob.
Well, I could pick 16 just out of one family.
Oh, yeah.
But I would like to see the queen out there, too, to be honest.
You reckon... Wouldn't you just be replaced by some other form of scumbaggery? The thing is, it's like a hydra and it's perennial, so it's a persistent problem that you can never really, truly, ever finally get rid of, is it? You got to be vigilant all the time. You can't rest. And that's the problem the last generation or so. People decided to give it a rest. And to stop caring.
Yeah, you know, why? Somewhere along the lines, there, it became popular, this notion that you shouldn't talk about politics or religion in a mutual situation. And that wasn't the case, you know, way back when. That was, you weren't a man unless you could talk politics and keep up with the conversation. Now you're, I don't know what a man is anymore, really. It's pretty sad, actually.
Apparently Justin Bieber's a man. He's got some kind of... He's got some new fragrance. It's like, someday.
Justin Bieber.
I don't have any chin hairs, but I'm very, very liked by 10-year-old girls.
Let me tell you just this one thing I've been working on now. You know, I'm in Salt Lake City, Utah, for some god-awful reason, and you know, the Mormon Church is very, very powerful here. It is pretty much the government, to be perfectly frank. And I was walking through the they have a genealogy center. Now, keep in mind, the church, the Mormon Corporation, you know, has like 200,000 different corporations under it, massive investments and ownership and things. But one of the things it does is called the Genealogy Center. It does Ancestry.com. And hanging up on the wall in one of its complexes where people can actually go and look at the genealogy was a chart that just shocked the heck out of me, because as I'm looking at it, and I want to preface this by mentioning that someone very well-connected who is, I won't say his name, told me in 2009 who the what the presidential campaign in America was going to be. And he said it was going to be Mitt Romney, was going to be the Republican nomination. I said, how can you possibly know that? You know, people don't want him because he's Mormon, for one thing. And he said, go to the Genealogy Center and look for the chart of one Miss Anne Hutchinson. Well, Anne Hutchinson turns out to be a, according to the Catholic Church, a witch in Salem, Massachusetts. And from her lineage was spawned the Bush family, the Roosevelt family, the Romney family, and several other very prominent people who were, one of them was the president of Ireland, you know, several royal houses. And this is a direct descendant. So, and also Joseph Smith, who is the president of the original prophet of the church. So this very, 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 you know, interconnected family. So I went a little step further and found that Roosevelt, the Delano in Roosevelt's name, went to some other very prominent figures in history. And we start seeing that Nixon and Ford were the presidents, were also in this same lineage, as well as some others. And then you expand it even further. And at this point, I've found that every single president we've ever had that's been propped up by the Democratic or Republican Party has been a pretty much a direct or indirect descendant of George Washington and, by default, of the Queen of England. We have George Bush Sr., who's known to have bowed before the Queen and taken a title of nobility. Most of the presidents have done that. So we, the Republican and the Democratic parties, are private associations. They have nothing to do with government. They are there to ensure that these people are the ones propped up for election. So we have basically a royal line of presidents all the way from George Washington, and that has never changed.
Now, I wonder, does that also include relation to perhaps the prime ministers of the other Commonwealth countries? You know, like, I wonder if the prime ministers of the UK, Australia, and New Zealand, and Canada are related. I'd be very interested to know. It'd be pretty funny if they were, wouldn't it?
I'm sure they are. Like I said, the president of Ireland was one of those.
I tell you that they are.
Yeah. Let's do some kind of a morph or some genealogy map or something like that. A 14-year-old girl figured it out in the States somehow that all the US presidents throughout history are all related and they're like first cousins with Barry Satoru, Barack Obama, whatever. Anyway, after the break, ladies and gentlemen, I will be taking calls. I'm sorry I didn't. There was a couple of people who called in that hung up. Please call back in. I'm very, very sorry, but I will take your calls after this little break here in a few minutes. We'll be right back. Radio.com. We're going to go to our caller. I think Andrew in Washington also, you called in, mate. Please call back. And somebody else called in right at the very start of the show, and they're on hold for like nearly 40 minutes before hanging up. Please call back. Seems an awful waste of your time today with no payoff, you know? Kind of like, I'm not going to refer that to something pornographic. All right, my first caller is on the line there. Area code 586, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you doing today?
I'm somewhat fabulous. What's your first name, sir?
Sean.
Sean, and what state are you calling from, man?
South Carolina.
South Carolina. What's on your mind today?
Chiropractic and veganism.
Wow. Why exactly is that on your mind? Is it relevant to what we're talking about?
Well, I actually saw on your website, I was assuming that you had a lady talking on vaccinations. She was a naturalist or a naturopath, second hour,
She's
is that
a
correct?
A herbalist. That was Catherine
herbalist.
Smith. Yeah. So if you wanted to contact Catherine, you can go to the Natural Medicine .net.nz, and you can contact her through there for all of that stuff. But yeah, incidentally, my brother's a chiropractor.
Well, my grandmother was a chiropractor, my father's a chiropractor, and so am I.
Wow. So you're like a
I'm a
go
guru.
Ahead. You're a chiropractic guru.
Yes, and I was very fortunate. My grandmother was also a vegetarian. My dad was. And so I was very fortunate. I was never shot up with mercury or formaldehyde or cow pus or MSG or antifreeze.
I don't know what you're missing.
Especially, I can't believe you're missing out on antifreeze, man. That's the Shiite Muslim.
Oh, yes. You know, what really opened my eyes up to the New World Order was when I was 8 years old in the public school system. I was kicked out of school because there was a so-called epidemic going on of the flu. And even though all the other young children were getting vaccinated, my brother and I, we had to be expelled from school, escorted out by the police, because we may have, you know, somehow contacted them, even though they were the ones getting the protection.
That's a valuable life lesson, that is.
Yes, but the scary part was actually being escorted out by the police, and I looked through the gym door, and I saw a big line of all the kids getting shot up, and they were screaming.
So let me ask you a question there, bud. Do people look down on you because you refuse to vaccinate, because you're one of those people? You're like us, you know? You're like one of those free people. They need to be, you know, they're dangerous to society because they're going to cause disease or they're going to, you know, do you get that kind of reaction?
Well, when I was younger, you know, I grew up in the 70s, and my dad was a quack, of course. But now every professional athlete, you know, football, baseball, basketball team, they all have team chiropractors. So chiropractic's more accepted. More people I see are waking up to the dangers of vaccines. I see it everywhere. More people are becoming vegans, no animal products. They're opening up to the dangers of Coca-Cola, like Vinny likes to say, that rots your guts. It's being more accepted now, that's
sure. I love Coca-Cola. It's like a level 6 biotoxin, but you can drink it.
Well, I'd rather just go and hang out with some Bolivians or Peruvian Indians there and just do a little chew on some coca.
Yeah. Why don't we just, I don't know, mainline fluoride into our eye sockets?
I think we should do this show over with some ayahuasca.
Yeah, and we could invite David Icke.
On the subject of Coca-Cola.
I turned out by Vinny, Max Deegan. I love his new movie, Transformation, and unbelievable. And I saw you, and I've been listening to you. You're fantastic. And I wanted to know, you take donations, you do something, personal check, or how would you take
donations? Hold on, you need to speak up, mate.
I wanted to give you a donation. Would you accept $50,000?
Yeah. There's two general rules that I learned from Jack Blood. Number one, drink. Number two, take the money.
No, but what would you like to do? Let me tell you real quickly. The premises of chiropractic has nothing to do with back pain. It's about making sure your vertebrae are in proper alignment, your spinal cord or the nerves that exit your vertebrae are not impinged. So we adjust the spine, put it back, you know, the vertebrae back into place so the brain can communicate to the body. It's very simple, and we also teach people to live naturally in every way.
Mm-hmm. And there's also another branch of chiropractic which my brother's been getting into called network spinal analysis, or Orwellianly known as NSA chiropractic.
Oh, yes, excellent. Donnie Epstein was the man, you know. Donnie Epstein, who invented network, he has done more research than any other chiropractor, in my opinion.
And I've been trying to get him on the show, but it's been a long silent night for me, unfortunately.
I could imagine. When would a good time for me to actually possibly be a guest host there with you?
During showtime, most likely. We have next week is like wide open, man.
Okay, so just go on your website and just communicate you through that way?
Yeah, absolutely. Go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and click on the contact button that should be up near the top there.
Okay, and let me tell you one more thing, too. Now, Tiger Woods, I read an article, he has a personal chiropractor, and their mission, Tiger and his personal chiropractor, is to get the entire golf association off of amphetamines. He said 95% of them are taking speed for so-called better concentration, recovery of muscles. It's very disgusting. Also, the children in America, one out of five children are now on amphetamines, so-called Ritalin or Adderall. And, you know, it's according to the AMA, that is a Class A amphetamine, which is the same class as cocaine. So there's one-fifth of all of our school children are now on synthetic cocaine.
Wouldn't that be a classic scandal to drug test the entire National Golf Association and they all get fired because they're on drugs? That would be classic. They're on speed. That would be just wonderful.
I mean, yeah, seriously, they'd be putting high airs on wares or something like that, you know. And incidentally, what's the difference between a Cadillac Escalade and a golf ball? Tiger Woods could drive a golf ball 400 yards.
Hey, don't give up your day job there, Vinny.
Righto.
No, I'm joking. But the what really disturbs me, too, is the Vicodin and the Xanax abuse going on in this country. That's synthetic opium. And you have more people, just the last 2 months ago I read this. Now, the government admits this. More people in America now die from properly prescribed drugs than all illegal drugs combined. It's just that the doping of this country is getting out of hand. The vaccinations, the series has gone up. The recommendation series for like a one-year-old child, it's gone from like 7 to 18 series. And they want this done every 6 months, an extra 18 shots.
Yeah, yeah. And if you, on the show yesterday, the day before yesterday, the New Zealand government is now going to contact your kids via their Facebook thing and try and convince them to take vaccines and tell them that they don't have to tell mummy and daddy about it.
Yes, but it's disgusting. I heard Max Egan talk about that, where the doctors in New Zealand now, Australia, they can tell the children what they can get their brain zapped by electricity now and get their prepuces cut off. The prepuce, you know, they take that off the penis for so-called circumcision. They're letting the little 12-year-old boys say, yeah, I want that done, and I want my brain zapped, too, by electrodes.
Oh, my God. Well, Sean, I definitely want to have another conversation with you, man, so please contact us through the website. We'll bring you on for maybe an hour or two if you can, man.
Excellent. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks for your call, brother. We have another caller here, area code 484. You're on the air. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Vinny. How you doing tonight? This is a question for your guests, just because they were talking about...
Just what's your first name and state that you're calling from?
Kyle from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
All right, thanks, Kyle. Sorry, go ahead.
Just because they were talking about genealogy and stuff, where does Aleister Crowley fit into this all? And what's the movie series by Chris Everard? And he said that Crowley used to talk with a being by the name of Lamb. What's that all about?
You know, if I'm not mistaken, I'll shut up. As I understand it, I believe it was either Hillary Clinton or Barbara. I think it was Hillary Clinton that is actually related to Aleister Crowley in a big way.
No, actually, it's Barbara Bush.
Barbara Bush, okay. There you go.
She's the daughter of Aleister Crowley.
what a wonderful distinction that is.
Aleister Crowley is hiding in Barbara's bush. There you have it. Any more questions, Kyle? I'll take that as a no. All right.
Hey, one of you guys was going to say something about Coca-Cola. I'm always interested in Coca-Cola stories.
Well, a guy in a bar told me that when Coca-Cola comes off the ships in New Zealand, it's a level 6 biotoxin. Biotoxins are classified from level 1 to 6. 1 being you can drink it, you can bathe in it, it's safe water. 6 meaning you need a oxygen tank, and if you breathe one whiff of this stuff, you will, if you're lucky, flop around the ground for 5 seconds and die. So when Coca-Cola syrup in the big containers comes off the ship, they have to be wearing hazmat suits, and then it's shipped via hazmat truck to a bottling plant where they water it down with fluoridated chlorinated municipal water, bottle it in BPA-contained plastic bottles, and sell it to you, and then brand it as the real thing.
Well, what I've heard as well is that Indian farmers discovered that they could use Coca-Cola as pesticide. So that's what they use, a cheap pesticide.
Oh, Matt, yeah, it's great for getting rust off your old tools. If you have a toilet that you can't get those stains off the bottom of it, kind of thing, you know, they're really dug in there, pour a 2.25 litre of Coke in there, man. Seriously, leave it to soak overnight. That stuff will just come right off there. If you've got some unwanted bodies that you need to dispose of, just fill a bathtub up with it, chuck in the body parts, it'll be fine. It'll be gone by morning.
Yeah, I don't know why they bothered with acid baths, because you know, I heard that Mountain Dew does a just as good a job.
Yeah. Yeah, I do confess to being a Mountain Dew man.
Just imagine it's my your inside.
It's my preferred solvent. In fact, isn't that what half of our food has become? It's like we're just consuming watered-down solvents for nourishment, make us more thirsty, hype us up on sugar. In fact, New Zealand, what was this? About a week ago, one girl died because the local supermarket was having a sale on Coca-Cola. So you could buy up to 4 2.25 litres of Coca-Cola for $6 every day. She did it for 4 days. That's 10 litres of Coca-Cola a day for 4 days, and she fracking died.
That says it all.
Oh, no. Sorry, I can't help that. Oh, never before has someone more deserving. You know, on the lighter side, one of the benefits of living in Southern California was to learn that the Mexicans use Coca-Cola to. You know, they soak their steaks in Coca-Cola. And, you know, if you've ever dropped a piece of meat into a glass of Coke, it's gone the next day. And so they actually cook their meat in Coca-Cola, and it is the best. It softens the meat to where it melts in your mouth. So I will give that to Coca-Cola as far as a meat softener. It's wonderful.
Look at it this way. Coca-Cola, it melts your meat. Inside and out.
Well, there's also another effect. I don't know if you've heard about this. Coca-Cola on pork. If you put Coca-Cola on pork and leave the pork for a while, you'll see little worms coming out of the pork. So that was the last time I ever looked at a bacon sandwich again.
I prefer my worms in the meat.
Yeah, protein. Well, see, and apparently that's why Islam prohibits the eating of pork, and so does Judaism, for that very reason, that it's not a clean meat. It's got, you know, live stuff in it that comes out when you eat it.
To fly to New Zealand by plane from New York City, it takes 22 hours. So from the Twin Cities, 19. I mean, I fly all the time, and 6 hours on a plane is like a lot, and 19 is wrong. And they distract you. They feed you, and then they feed you some more, and then they feed you, give me a dessert, give me a dessert, give me a dessert. I'll do a dessert, you prick, give me that dessert. I'll have a Bloody Mary? Yeah, give me a whiskey sour. Yeah, give me whatever you got. Just more liquor, more liquor, more liquor. And then when you're done, there's still 16 hours to go. If you want to know what it's like, you can experience going to New Zealand. It's very simple. Sit in a chair for 19 hours and take your hands and press your head as hard as you can. And don't stop. Don't stop! 19 hours, just like this. And then at the end of 19 hours, you pull your hands off and you feel like you're in New Zealand. You certainly won't feel like you're home. They say that New Zealand's beautiful, and I don't know, because by the time I got over the jet lag, I had to go. And it seems to me, if you're going to travel for 19 hours to another country, when you get there, they should have the common courtesy to speak another language. I did not fly all this way to hear English again.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. That was Lewis Black there. We proudly broadcast live in English and have people from several places in different hemispheres at the same time talking about different stuff. Because, after all, we are living in a world system. Let's not make any never mind here. There is no national sovereignty. Okay? It has been stolen. You don't have any rights or anything like that beyond what you actually physically go out there and protect and stand up for and verbally defend. If you don't defend your rights, you don't have any. If you don't know your rights, you don't have any. And most people neither know their rights nor defend them. So the vast majority of people on this earth do not have any rights. And may never experience the joy of actually being responsible for yourself and not having to rely on anybody else. My very special guests are Clint Richardson and allegedly known as Dave. We had a few other people lined up, but unfortunately, because we're in different time zones and what have you, some people can and can't make it. But anyway, guys, welcome back. Now, you were talking about, as I said in the break, my philosophy is, when is it inappropriate to talk about weed? You know, and allegedly known as Dave has in fact been doing urine therapy. And we've been talking about this over the break with much interest as to the purpose of urine therapy and what it can actually do for you. So Dave, if you would splurge and just let us know what's going on here with that.
Well, typically when you tell people what you're doing, you're drinking your own wee, or whatever you want to call it, you get the same reaction, the same reaction. But literally what it is, your kidneys filter your blood and filter out the excess water, excess hormones, enzymes, and all the things that your body is has manufactured, to keep you going. So all the excess hormones and enzymes and stuff just come out in your wee. And if you drink that, essentially you're putting back exactly what your body needs. So your body doesn't have to work so hard, for one thing, you know, synthesizing all this stuff. And it's exactly, you know, it's like a potion. It's exactly what you need. It's also, I found out a bit more about it just recently, that it's the water in it is distilled. And distilled water is actually extremely good for you, despite what the medical profession will tell you. The medical profession will tell you that you shouldn't drink distilled water because it will leach out minerals from your body, and that's a bad thing. It'll turn your bones brittle, that sort of thing.
As opposed to the fluoride, which has proven to make your bones brittle.
Exactly. But what they don't tell you is that it only leaches out inorganic minerals. And those inorganic minerals are the things that you don't want in your body. You know, it leaves alone the organic minerals that your body's made up of. So all the calcification that's in your body, that's the inorganic minerals. Yeah, distilled water will leach that out.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So they're saying to people, oh, my God, don't drink distilled water because it's going to leach vital minerals from your body. And they are vital minerals. Vital to them because they kill you.
Well, let's also consider how nature works. You know, the water is distilled into the sky and then comes back down in the form of rain. So rain is actually, aside from the acid rain, is actually the best form of water. That then goes into the ground and picks up the trace minerals that are in the water. So absolutely, distilled water is by far the best water you can drink. You will get the minerals, you know, from other sources, especially vegetables. Vegetables work the same way as your body. Their roots go down into the ground and pick up only trace minerals. The stuff that's coming out in your urine are the minerals that your body couldn't absorb because they're either too large or, as you say, inorganic. And also remember that your body is 70% water, and you want that water to be as pure as possible, and you always want to replenish that water. So,
yeah. Indeed. And I think we'll go to our caller now. We've got Tim in Washington. Tim, welcome back to the show, man. Haven't heard from you in a couple of days or a week or something.
Yeah, what's going on, Vinny?
Well, having some fun, man.
Now, yeah, man, I'm up there cracking up laughing at y'all, man. Y'all had me rolling there early. The banker game.
It's all Vinny's fault.
I can just imagine the queen trying to pick up the sword, and the sword is too heavy, and she falls down like, I ain't falling and they bloody well can't get up. I'm known. But you know what?
You know what? It's funny you say that because I can imagine her killing children very easily.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, the real Hunger Games would be like the queen there and just a whole bunch of children, and she just preys on each one of them, like in Predator.
Mm.
You know?
Hey, but I know
she has that kind of. type, you know, Predator.
You'd have to cut the camera, though, when she starts eating them.
I don't know. I think just make it R-18 and let people see it in all its glory, kind of thing. It might shock a few people. It'll be like Alien, you know, where people are, like, running out of the theaters, like, or puking in the aisles or something like that. You know, it'll be fantastic.
Hey, but you know, you're talking about the Coca-Cola thing. There's another thing that you could pull on your car battery has corrosion. It'd eat the corrosion off your car battery.
Yeah, you know, actually, police officers in America carry a bottle of Coke in their cars, in their trucks, for that very purpose.
Yeah,
and they also carry a bag of chalk in their car. It's called Coke. If they see another car that they really want to confiscate and drive around in, there's a chuck it in the back seat.
and the children, they put the children back
there. But I want to hit on the issue that I heard my man was talking about, how we got rights when we were born. And I have a hard time grasping. Because it's like the minute you're born, you got to sign a birth certificate, and once you sign that birth certificate, you pretty much got the handcuffs on you.
Yeah, but see, you didn't sign that birth certificate, did you?
You know, your parents signed it for you. So.
Right, your parents were coerced, essentially. Coercion and trickery are the are the witchcraft of lawyers, basically. So your parents were basically coerced. At this point, they're forcing people to do it in a lot of cases, forcing people to get vaccines and all that. So you never really had a choice. And in all contracts, very important to understand contract law, everything you do is a contract. And, you know, if you don't sign the contract, you don't understand the contract, and you don't acquiesce to the contract, then there's no way that contract is valid, because that's basically contract law. So, on the other hand, you signed your driver's license, which means that you really are consenting to the vehicle code. You can get around it. You can do all kinds of things, which these guys talk about. But, you know, unless you know then that signature really is your consent. When you register to vote, when you register to do anything, if you register to vote, you're giving credibility to the whole election system. Whereas not voting would be like, wait a minute, you know, I don't consent to this. It's fixed. It's rigged. So we offer our consent in a lot of ways, but the birth certificate is not one of them.
Yeah, now when you go to talking about the voting thing, you know how much scrutiny you have to go through to when people find out, like, well, you're not voting. Your parents, your forefathers, they fought for you, the right for you to vote. And I'm like, I don't need to hear all this. Then you got, you know, it's the kind of stuff you have to put up with.
It takes, you know, it's, I don't know about that Dave there, but it takes a long time to get over the hump of indoctrination, you know, of understanding that the Constitution is not what gives you a right. The Constitution only lists those rights, but then it also lists, you know, basically how those rights can be taken away. If you read, for instance, the Fifth Amendment, it actually, you know, take off the rose-colored glasses and go read the Fifth Amendment, and it will clear everything up for you, okay, in the so-called Bill of Rights. Go read that thing and rearrange the words so that it makes sense. But what it basically says is that your life, your liberty, and your property can be taken away with due process of law and just compensation. So you see, if you had the right of life, liberty, and property, that wouldn't be written. But as is, it basically says that all of that can be taken away through the court system, through the due process. Likewise, the 13th Amendment. People have the fallacy that the 13th Amendment ended slavery. But in fact, all it did was stop individual people from owning slaves. If you read the 13th Amendment, it says that slavery and indentured servitude are now, you know, abolished unless, and you know, these unless things are all over the Constitution, except unless, it says unless you're convicted of a crime. So you see, you can become a slave or involuntary servant of the state if you're convicted in one of their courts. So the difference between having a right and a privilege, and the difference between understanding what a natural God-given right, doesn't matter if you believe in God, it's the concept of God that's important. The understanding that you're born with these rights through your Creator. The big difference here is simply that no one can tell you what your rights are. If they do, then they are granting you privileges. So that's what I was saying earlier. You cannot legislate a right. If you do, you're talking about a privilege, that you must get permission. And another example of that, and I'll shut up, is the legalization, this argument of legalizing marijuana, for instance. What people don't understand is that to legalize something is to actually make it illegal with permission. So right now, marijuana is illegal in California, for instance, and people are getting permission or the privilege from government, not the right, because you have to have a license or a permit to smoke marijuana for medical purposes. So you see the difference between having the right to smoke. That would mean decriminalization. That would mean there's no law in the books. You could grow it like a rose bush or a carrot. Okay, but right now, pot is illegal. Unless you
parents have
permission.
Killed more people.
Right. So legalization is simply the illegalization of something and getting permission to do an illegal act. So you have to ask yourself, what about marriage? Why do I need a license to get married? Is marriage an illegal act unless I have a license?
Well, it was something Billy T said last night about how when you make declarations and you enforce your will using the Wills Act, that you can basically declare anything, but you have to declare it as a thing. Like if you don't want to pay your taxes, you don't just ignore the tax man and not pay your taxes. You actually go to the tax man and declare that it's your will to not pay your taxes, and then they can't actually touch you, allegedly. This is what he's saying. And he said you can even do this with marijuana. And I said, so what? I could write up a document that's called the Declaration of Bud Dependence and then grow marijuana. He's like, yep. And I was just like, wow, isn't that interesting?
Well, everything I agree with about the privileges and all that, and we always talk about that all the time. I have a thing I call where I say there's two types of slavery, legal and illegal slavery. Legal slavery is when you volunteer to do the same job in opposed to being forced to do it.
And that's important because everybody in prison is there voluntarily. That's a very important aspect. Everybody in prison right now, sitting there rotting in prison or working for the federal prison industry, making desks and chairs and armoring vehicles and license plates and so the government can sell the products and invest in those prisons. You know, all of those people have signed that. It's a voluntary process. They've agreed and consented to the process, and they're there voluntarily. It is voluntary slavery, basically.
Or they've hired a lawyer who's signed them away on their behalf.
Exactly.
Indeed. Well, I think it's like when you talk about people who represent you, a lot of the people who get into those positions to represent people are actually in there because they misrepresent themselves. You're listening to the Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back after the break. 218-339-8525, final segment. This is your last chance to call in. Radio. Hey, we have two Tims on the line, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to unmute you both, so we'll have it'll be like Tim, the search for the golden unicorn movie or something like that. All right, Tim and Tim. Tim from Wisconsin and Tim from Washington.
DC Washington.
Hi, guys. Yeah. One famous for cheese and one famous for starting illegal wars. All right, that's the state apparently we have. So Tim in Wisconsin, man, what's up?
I for sure. You're putting both of us on at the same time.
Oh yeah.
I wasn't sure.
And talk at the same time. It's like we're all part of the same conversation now, man.
I like. I guess they were on. I hate to say I forget his name again. But anyway, I really like the things that he said about what actually makes, you know, things right and stuff. Because you know, that's a way that, you know, I always would like to think. And he's also one that I also, you know, even though I know the program's not about anything about racism, but I also do like him for also what he said on another program about, you know, there's no entity in the sky that's gonna, you know, save us. That we have to save ourselves, and no entity or being in the sky that's gonna put anyone in a burning hell, in a terrible burning hell.
Or rather, the entity is actually inside you, and it will give you all the energy and power and intelligence and everything that you need in order to free yourself anyway.
Say that way, isn't the saying that God only helps those who helps themselves?
Yeah, in fact, there was a joke about that. There was this guy standing on a roof in New Orleans, you know, just after Katrina, and he's standing there, and the water's rising, and a boat comes along, and the guy in the little rowboat says to him, "Hey, mate, you know, jump on the boat, and we'll get out of here." He says, no, God will save me." So the guy with the boat goes, "Okay, you know," cruises off, and then the water's suddenly up to his knees. He's standing on his roof, and the Coast Guard comes along, you know, in a little rubber boat, you know, and they say, "Hey, mate, come on, jump on the boat. We're going to get you out of here. We're going to take you to safety." He goes, "No, God will save me." And the water keeps rising, and he's up to his chest. Coast Guard helicopter comes in, and they lower a basket down. They say to him, "Come on, jump in the basket. We're going to take you to safety." He goes, "No, God will save me." And so he dies. He drowns. And he goes to God, and he says, "God, why didn't you save me? And God said to him, mate, I've seen you a guy in a dinghy. I sent you some guys in the Coast Guard rubber ducky boat. I sent you a Coast Guard helicopter. What more do you want?
Was God drunk when he...
I think Jaden Smith told that joke a bit better.
Well, there's plenty of people that can say it better, but my my sister probably did it a lot better. She called it an atheist joke. And what I take from it is that your belief in something does not override facts.
Yeah, absolutely not an atheist joke. It's actually more of a biblical parable that you have to be logical in your faith. You have to still have some reason to your to
your
belief.
You have to recognize responsibilities that are put in front of you. You have to recognize opportunities.
You know, and let me just say that that is a very important problem that we are facing. And when you think about it, the foundation of a corporation is to take the blame and responsibility away from the people actually committing the crime. In this case, I'm talking about government, and putting it on the corporation. So if you have a limited liability corporation, you're taking away all responsibility. You can't sue the person. You can only sue the corporation. If the corporation pays out all of its money, you can't get anything from the corporation. So one of the problems with government is that we have corporate individuals, persons, and not people, you know, flesh and blood people without any type of conflict of interest, corporate stock ownership, all that stuff. So you have a situation where you don't have a government run by people. You have basically a limited liability corporation. In fact, some states and cities and counties have limits on what you can even accomplish in a lawsuit against a city. You can only get as much as their insurance will pay out. So we have a situation basically where there is no accountability, there is no responsibility in government because the system is set up as a corporation.
Now, there's a larger picture here, though. What the government is actually doing is taking away the responsibility from us all. You know, we're dependent on government for food. You know, government. When I say government, I mean government / corporations / you know, big pharma / every, because they're all one thing. We're dependent on them for pretty much everything, and it's now increasingly important for people to start taking responsibility back for themselves. You know, becoming adults for the first time. Because that's what government's there to do, is to keep us as children completely helpless and dependent on them, you know, and we've never lived as adults. And it's about time we started.
Yeah, in nature, you know, there's always this balance between the wolves and the sheep. And, if they get too few sheep, the wolves will start dying off. Likewise, if there's too few wolves, the sheep will start multiplying. Well, guess what? There's billions of sheep on this planet and a very, very, very small supply of wolves. And that's not going to change. The sheep are basically unlimited at this point. So the we can't do anything about the wolves unless the sheep actually collectively wake up to the fact that these wolves are doing what they're doing. So nature needs to be restored in the structure of government, whatever that government is. And right now, it's a very few barred wolves eating all the sheep, or at least eating the productivity of the sheep.
Particularly those in the Fabian society, the symbol of which is a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. They've been very
clever
about that.
That kind of reminds me of Jefferson.
Go ahead, Tim.
That kind of reminds me of Jefferson said that democracy is two wolves and a sheep voting on what's for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And a republic is when the sheep has a gun.
Yeah. I love them old sayings.
They've been very clever about
it. Just one more thing I was going to say quick. Is the thing that gets me about the most American Christians is how they're just like that man in that story joke That's why he used to just trust God, and God sent the boat and all that stuff. But that's what's happening to them, and they don't realize it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, think about it this way. A Christian, you don't have to belong to a church to be a Christian. How many Christian religions are there, you know, really, when it boils down to it, thousands? Likewise, you don't have to be a good citizen, or I should say, you don't have to be a Republican or a Democrat to be a responsible citizen. But the voting public has been conned, just like the Christians have been conned, into joining a nonprofit 501(c) corporation that is bound by government rules, basically. So instead of being Christians, they're being one of these organized corporate religions. Likewise, voters, instead of being responsible with their vote, are going to a private association, 501(c), and giving them their vote without, almost blindly, because it's the party, right?
It's like the government is some kind of rabble-rousing machine, just adept at getting people to attack each other. It's like the difference between voting for the Republicogs and the demagogues.
But you know, I grew up in the church, and the thing that drove me away from the church was they said that if I don't accept Jesus as my personal savior, then I'm going to hell. I mean, there was no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Sounds like the party's going to be in hell, doesn't it? Most of the people, apparently.
Either that or the party will turn the country into hell. which I think is becoming more increasingly likely.
I have a joke. I say, "But you can have heaven on earth or hell on earth. Either way, you're an HOE."
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. See, well, we all get used, don't we? So, thank you very much, guys, for calling in. I hope you have yourself a fabulous day and what have you.
Okay.
And also, my very special guests, the remaining ones. Allegedly known as Dave and Clint Richardson. Thanks very much, guys. And we'll also be doing an interview after this for those of you who are subscribed for $5 a month with Max Egan for up to an hour he might be willing to give us by. So it'll be us three and Max, exclusive video interview. You can get that at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com if you subscribe. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. Thank you very much to all the callers who called in to contribute to the show. If you want me to interview somebody, or you want me to do something, or you have an idea for a video, anything like that, trust me, I am all ears for ideas. Send them all through the VinnyEastwoodShow.com contact page. And we'll see you again sometime, folks. Allegedly.
Yeah.